puts it in! The U.S. go up! What a goal from Carlos Bocanegra!
Lloyd will try a long hit! What a goal from Lloyd! This is spectacular! It's hit with no regard for humanity! Is this the moment for Shaqiri? Yes, it is! Switzerland! And Shaqiri has scored in the 90th minute! That was worth the price of admission alone!
This is Soccer Matters on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 92.5.
Brought to you by the Daspit Law Firm, DaspitLaw.com. From the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Glenn Davis.
Welcome into Soccer Matters here on ESPN 97.5. Man, are things heating up in Major League Soccer? How about last night? New England, the most points in league history. Crazy goals. Atlanta, RSL, Columbus, D.C. getting huge wins, and teams focusing how you get into the playoffs and what type of momentum you have. So great part of the year. I put a tweet out yesterday, and I was not kidding. I love this time of the year in Major League Soccer, these last couple of weeks, because there are always a number of teams battling to get into the playoffs. So the consequence thermometer goes way, way up. No different than the Astros and every pitch being magnified here in Houston last night during the World Series. I'd love consequence in sports. I don't like games where there's not much at stake. And you know what? There's some managers right now thinking about earlier games in the year going, wow, I wish I had done this because I could use another 6 points right now. So from the urgency of Major League Soccer, stunning losses in Europe, hint, hint, Manchester United, Bayern Munich, Barcelona, and a few others. By the way, Ronald Koeman is out at Barcelona. A visit Tuesday to Houston from FIFA that occurred around that little thing called World Cup 2026, which many of us in Houston don't even know that we're bidding for it, but we are hoping to earn the right to be a host city. Yes, the World Cup might be a little bit bigger than the Texas Bowl. All due respect to the Texas Bowl. The World Cup is simply the largest sporting event on the planet, bar none. Yes, bigger even than the World Series. And I've been watching the Astros. And like I said, love the magnification of every single pitch and how important every single pitch is in the World Series. All right. Super Bowl, Olympic Games, Ryder Cup, NBA Finals, World Cup blows all these events out of the water. And yes, it occurs every 4 years. So we have a chance to host in 2026. More on the World Cup hosting bid from Houston tonight on Soccer Matters ESPN 97.5, presented by the Daspit Law Firm. John Daspit, Daspit Law Firm, DaspitLaw.com, 713-322-HURT. We will talk about the bid. We will talk about Houston, where we think we are in it. I think we all know that we have what it takes to be a World Cup host city in 2026. It does not mean we will get it. And who knows? Because FIFA is very clandestine. We'll use that word again in this first segment. Again, thanks to John Daspit and the Daspit Law Firm, 713-322-HURT. They're bilingual. John and his firm, personal injury attorneys. They will have you covered. DaspitLaw.com. So let's start with the FIFA World Cup context. The next World Cup will be held in Qatar. It's just over a year away. Yes, Qatar. We all know the controversy around that. Following that, the U.S., Mexico, and Canada are going to co-host in 2026, with the majority of the games in the United States for obvious reasons. Now, if you're one of the cities to be selected to host, there are the obvious financial gains if done correctly for your city. And a remarkable opportunity, as always, when the World Cup comes around, to grow the sport, create an everlasting impression on youth, blossom, learn the history of the World Cup. Every single play and decision becomes history and lore in World Cups, because there is this thing called patience that one has to have to wait every 4 years for it to be played after extensive qualification around the globe. So we've heard the economic benefits get touted by committees all the time. So, you know, the number being parroted is $1.3 billion, and look at all the money that will come into Houston, and lots of money will change hands. And there's no denying that. And yes, this is essential, because in order to get money and support behind a bid, you have to sell the economics to Houston power brokers. We have not heard much from the standpoint of competition and the sport and the history of the World Cup, which I think is too bad, which is typical, though, of how we have addressed the sport in Houston, because a lot of people that run the sport in Houston do not have a deep-lying passion for it. We have heard the obvious with infrastructure, facilities, public transportation, the fact that we're a gateway to South America and all the diversity of our city, which is second to none, in my opinion. And yes, we do deserve the World Cup. And long before Austin coined themselves with the slogan, Austin is a soccer city, from my great friend, rest in peace, Wolfgang Sundholz, we in Houston were saying Houston is a soccer city way before. We have touted all the sold out games at Reliant. That's our go-to. And we can thank the Mexican national team for that. And we have been told for 3 years that there has been nonstop work on this bid. Fantastic. I think we did a poor job with this bid on giving ownership, involvement, and a feeling of overall pride and a one-for-all, all-for-one attitude to the overall soccer community in Houston. The soccer community has been shut out during this bid process. And this has prevented us from spreading the word of the game and ultimately helping the Dynamo turn the corner with their new owner, Ted Siegel. The Dash turn the corner. You have to tie all of this together. And this has been missed glaringly. Many people aren't even aware we are bidding, and I don't understand why we haven't done more. And I do understand. Mainstream media has not been engaged over the last 3 years. In the end, none of that may even matter, though, with FIFA. Remember, may not even matter. But for me, it was a missed opportunity for us locally here to pull a soccer community together as one on this World Cup bid. Doesn't matter now. Our thinking here is not original and expansive when running soccer in this town from the big three. The fact is, you got to cheerlead this thing. And there's been a little bit of that. But it hasn't engaged everybody. And we've been told about Houston things that we already know. This is to influence the FIFA officials who have this kind of skull and bones nature about them. Nobody ever knows what they're doing. Nobody what the criteria is, for obvious reasons, when it comes to awarding bids. Remember that fans are going to come to Houston from all over the world. All right, so let's talk about some of the cities. So Atlanta, you know, Atlanta's a hot one. Everybody says Atlanta's going to get it, I guess because MLS attendance must be important. So those huge crowds that they're getting in Major League Soccer, I'm assuming is going to be a big part of how Atlanta sells what's going on there. They do have soccer history there, by the way, going back to the North American Soccer League. But let's hope MLS attendance isn't important in Houston for our bid, or we're in trouble. I mean, I'm shooting you straight here because we need transparency. We need honesty now for this game more than ever to help the new owner, Ted Siegel, turn the Dynamo product and the Dash product around. It's time to be honest. It's time to just not be, you know, followers and sheep. It's time to be honest about where we are, how we got where we are, and our need to get behind the new owner, Ted Siegel, to help him turn this around. We got to support this man. LA, of course, will get it. New York, Dallas. Dallas won't get it based on FC Dallas attendance, but they'll get it based on Jerry Jones in his facility, which begs the question, can we have two teams from Texas? The play here from us in Houston is, yes, we can from a geographic standpoint. You hear the head of our committee, Chris Canetti, who, by the way, was also the president of the Houston Dynamo over the last 9 years. So put those together. But we have heard from Chris that the geographic Monterrey, Mexico, Houston, Dallas is a great thing. I like that theory. I don't think and don't know if FIFA will like that theory. I don't know if FIFA will feel that way. Miami, San Francisco, Seattle all seem to be in the category of winning one of the bids. So Houston is likely going to be fighting it out with Boston, Denver, Kansas City, Philadelphia, and Washington, D.C., which might be in the top group, also D.C. What about Nashville? They've become a fan favorite for U.S. national team games. Baltimore, Cincinnati, Orlando seem to be long shots. What are your thoughts? And what are your thoughts on our bid process here in Houston? Did you know about it? Are you excited about it? 713-780-3776. Pelé's pass. Now, I also want to put out tonight this before we get the break. I want you to give me also your thoughts on Houston as a World Cup city and everything that has gone on up to this date prior to FIFA coming in this week. And we're all hoping to get the World Cup here. Who cares how it happens? We want it here. But I also want to get your thoughts tonight on what are the most memorable moments in your mind from World Cups. Pelé's pass to a flying forward, Carlos Alberto, in the 4-1 Brazil win over Italy in the 70 World Cup. Diego Maradona in 86 in Mexico, slaloming through the English defenders to score twice for Argentina versus England in the quarterfinals, beating Terry Butcher, the English defender, I think twice. Pelé's pass to a flying forward, Alberto, to me, is one of the most memorable. And then, of course, growing up in New Jersey, I got to see Pelé playing. What about, let's come up with a couple others. How about Miroslav Klose, 2014 of Germany, becoming the all-time leading goal scorer at the World Cup in Brazil 2014. And yes, I have to mention it, Brazil fans, the Mannschaft, Germany's crushing 7-1 over Brazil in Brazil with the Canary Yellow, the host country. I'll never forget that, with people absolutely in tears. So this game is something we feel deeply passionate about, brings us some of the greatest moments of joy, and we suffer from this game as well. If you're a fan of L3, what about the memorable opening win over Germany in 2018? Germany would then go on to lose to South Korea, who was number 56 in the world. What about the 1956 U.S. team winning 1-0 against England? A shocking upset. The hand of God. The Zidane headbutt. French World Cup winners in differing times. In fact, they won it in 98 without an out-and-out striker. Yes, they are the defending champions, by the way, right now, the French, Le Bleu. And for Mexico fans, I think I got to toss in that remarkable Manuel Negrete side volley at a packed over 100,000 fans at Azteca Stadium. So you get the point. The World Cup history, the moments, good, bad, the lore due to the fact that it only occurs every 4 years is pretty remarkable. Fans these days lose sight of who wins the Super Bowl and the NBA title pretty quickly, unless you're from that city. So tonight, I want your most indelible World Cup moments. It could be as simple as your experience at a World Cup match, a singular play, a moment, a conquest, a win, whatever it is. So let's get two thoughts here, and I'm going to go to break. Let's get some phone calls. 713-780-3776. Your thoughts on our potential of hosting. Have you heard about us hosting the bid? Have we done enough? And number two, what is your most memorable World Cup moment? All right, Soccer Matters here on ESPN 97.5. Quick thank you to Advantage BMW Midtown. Get down there. Go see Justin. Go see Steven. Advantage BMW Midtown. They'll take you through sales, right through the whole process. You get yourself in a great sedan. You get an NX5. It is the place to be. We've hosted some Soccer Matters live shows down there at Advantage BMW Midtown. So if you're in the market for a luxury vehicle, for a BMW, there is only one place to go. It's Advantage BMW Midtown. I'm pumped for soccer talk tonight. Let's get it going. 713-780-3776. Bring me an opinion tonight. Just what they like to do. Whatever it is, you got it. Long as it pleases you. Make it last.
This is Heisman Trophy winner Troy Smith, and you're listening to ESPN 97.5. Go Bucks.
You're listening to Soccer Matters on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 92.5.
Brought to you by the Daspit Law Firm. From the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Glenn Davis.
All right, welcome back to Soccer Matters here on ESPN 97.5 as we continue on here tonight. As always, we want to thank our presenting sponsor, John Daspit and the Daspit Law Firm. It's DaspitLaw.com. Remember, they are bilingual. All you have to do is give them a call, 713-322-HURT. They're personal injury attorneys. Car accident, boat, motorcycle. You might drive an 18-wheeler. You might work in one of the refineries here in Houston. Well, your man is John Daspit and the Daspit Law Firm. And don't forget, they are supporting your game, the sport of soccer. John's a big fan of the Houston Dynamo, Austin FC, because of their office up there. And of course, I will mention it and reveal he is a Chelsea fan. Next guest is one of the bright young talents in soccer media in this country. With The Athletic, he's Sam Stashkul. He joins us now. Sam, how are you?
Glenn, I'm doing well. Thank you for that very kind intro. How are you doing today?
All right. So listen, I consider you one of the best guys at simplifying all the categories, mechanisms, rules of Major League Soccer. You have a very good way of of kind of demystifying it, I think. So what I want to talk to you about is something that you've done a lot of talk about already, but the under 22 initiative and how this mechanism will help roster build in the future and integrating youth into teams and helping people maybe absorb a differing way of looking at building rosters in the future.
Yeah. So I guess let's put this to the test, see if I can explain it concisely. So basically the under 22 initiative, for those who do not know, it allows teams to go out and sign players under the age of 22, right there in the name, for whatever acquisition cost. So a transfer fee or loan fee that they want. So they can spend $10 million on a guy and he can count towards the under 22 initiative as long as he makes less than the maximum budget charge in salary.
And that's how much? 600.
This year, it changes every year, but it's 612. You nailed it for this season. Okay. So it kind of opens up a new market of players. Now it's a pretty limited range, right? Because if you're paying $10 million for a guy, he's probably going to want more money than 600,000 a year, right? Yeah. So you kind of have to find the sweet spot. But it does open up MLS teams to go out and sign more players that are kind of high potential, high ceiling guys. Now there's some risk involved, right? Because these guys are 19, 20 years old. Maybe they don't have so much pro experience. You're spending a lot of money on them. The idea is that they'll come in, they'll help the team, they'll do well on the field. And then there'll be guys that maybe can get moved on to Europe for a profit and MLS can make some money. And that's kind of the player trading aspect that MLS hasn't really hit up in terms of revenue stream yet. And they want to change that. They want to become more of a selling league. So this is an avenue for that. That could also improve the level of play. But when you're buying guys that young, you're going to have some misses, you know, sure. And it's just inexact. You have less data on them to begin with, right? So you can be less certain about the outcomes once you get them. And it's going to, even guys that do succeed, it's going to take them time, right? And there are going to be some ups and downs, even for the ones that do well in year 2, 3, or 4.
So let's talk about one that we just called the Houston LA Galaxy game. Yeah. And Dejan Jovalich is on that team. Apparently they paid $4 million for him. They beat out other European clubs for him. I think he was playing in Austria. The Galaxy didn't have to your point, incorporate that acquisition cost into their budget. And they didn't have to use a DP spot. But, you know, $4 million bucks is a pretty hefty, you know, from MLS standards, that's a pretty hefty buy, right?
Yeah, it's not insignificant for sure. You know, you look at some teams around the league and they've never spent a transfer fee that high, right? Mm-hmm. Houston maybe has with Ellis potentially. I don't know what the exact was there, but that would be kind of the only one in that range for the Dynamo, for instance. So Jovalich, pretty serious player. Like he was a guy that was at Eintracht Frankfurt and rated pretty highly. He's obviously very young still, and he's done decently well for LA. I think he's got a couple of goals, couple assists, and he hasn't really been starting a lot because they have Chicharito, of course. So that's one that I'm actually curious to dive in more on. I've been working with a friend of mine who works for an analytics firm, and they kind of have this model that values what the actual transfer value of different players should be. And their model has Jovalich at way over what the Galaxy paid for him. Wow. So that one, you know, who knows how it'll turn out, but maybe that one ends up being it looks like a bargain in the future and they're able to move him on for a significant profit at some point down the road. But that one's, I'm glad you mentioned that one because that one's interesting.
Yeah, it is. And we had just seen him play and, you know, there's some good glimpses of him. We're talking to Sam Stachkal of The Athletic. All right. So there are a couple teams who have used all three spots. New York City FC is one of them. I think Atlanta is the other one. Is this
Austin has actually,
what's that?
Austin has actually.
And Austin FC, yeah. Right? Because they just got Musa Gite there as well, who fits under this category. So when you see that happening, you know, do you see some teams are just going to basically go with these U22 categories, keep it a very youthful team and kind of push aside the senior DP?
I think some teams will naturally have a younger bent, but I think there's always going to be room for the senior guys. And there's going to be different models for different teams, right? What the Galaxy do isn't going to be the same thing as what New York Red Bulls do, right? Red Bulls, for instance, they're going to sign young DPs right? Like they're going to have DPs that are 21, 22 years old. And then maybe they'll sprinkle in a couple of U22 guys who just aren't quite as expensive, right? But they'll still count under that initiative. The Galaxy, they're always going to be in the market for a big name, a big star, a guy like Chicharito, who obviously would be a DP, or Jonah Dos Santos. And then they can mix in the guys like Yovelich. So I think there's going to be room for different models. I think it will enable teams that want to go young to go younger. And I think that could be interesting. But there's danger in that too. You know, it's important to have veteran presence on your team, especially in your highest paid spots, and a guy who can kind of carry you through some rough patches. So I think the teams that are going to be winning are still going to have some vets on the squad.
Who once said it? You can't win with kids. I know that was a famous quote somewhere.
It's hard. Like Philly did a good job last year, right? Won the supporter shield. But even then you have Ali Bedoya, right? Andre Blake, like you have veterans on the squad to go along with the youngsters.
Yeah. It's always a blend. And, you know, I'm looking at some of the names that have been signed under this initiative. Vancouver got a good one, and Deber Casado. He's been very dangerous for them. We mentioned Musa Gite, who I think is still acclimating to Major League Soccer, but fills a very, you know, important number nine role, target role for Austin FC. And in fact, I noticed in his insertion in Austin FC that it kind of crystallized the roles of others like Driussi and Cecilio Dominguez. To plug that type of a guy in. Now, if we look at how much of a game changer this is, I guess we just have to wait and see, really, right? We need time to go by.
It is a wait and see thing. You know, I would throw like Santiago Sosa in Atlanta. He's a player that I liked initially, but he's had some ups and downs this year. And it makes sense. I think he had played like 15 games as a pro before he arrived in MLS. So when you're that young and you're just starting out, there are very naturally going to be some ups and downs. But I anticipate that some of these guys will turn into big players in MLS, and a lot of them will fail. And that's just going to be the nature of this initiative. And that's something that we'll kind of have to keep in mind when we're grading these signings or getting excited about them when they happen.
Now, explain one other thing. We're talking to Sam Stachel of The Athletic. Let's say you used all three slots in this under 22 initiative. It would cost $600,000 out of your budget, you know, against your cap, whatever it is. And then you say to yourself, this is just a great way of being economical, saving money. Do you think a lot of teams are going to use all three of them? We have seen some. What do you think the future will hold after this year of really having this initiative, you know, for a complete season?
Yeah, I think a lot of teams will move to all three. Now, an important caveat that I didn't hit off the top, you only get three in certain situations. If you have three senior designated players, guys that are not young DPs, so under the age of 23, or guys that cannot be bought down with targeted allocation money, then you only get one U22 spot. So a few teams are in that category. Toronto, I believe, is in that. Miami currently is in that. So they're only allowed one U22 player. But I think of the teams that are able to have three slots, I think you'll start to see a lot go for them. Even if it's a situation where they're not going out on the transfer market, right? And buying U22 guys, maybe they'll give guys that are on their squad raises and count them as U22. The Galaxy did that with Julian Araujo and Efra Alvarez this year, right? So they have a full roster of them, but they only went out and bought one of them. Two of them were already on the squad. So I think you'll start to see a lot of teams use all three just because it makes sense, like you said, from a cap perspective. Those guys only count 200 on the budget. So why not? You know, you can create a little extra room.
And you just brought up something very important. We're talking to Sam Stachel of The Athletic, that this can be a mechanism used to protect your homegrown players too, right? Colorado did that with Sam Vines. You can protect guys that you've made an investment into as homegrowns for another 2 years, I guess.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, it makes it a lot easier for you to go out and sign that guy to a new contract and not have it wind down and then lose him for free, right? We've seen Dallas get in this game a little bit, even before the U22 initiative was a thing, and signing Paxton Pomykal and Jesus Ferreira to targeted allocation money contracts, right? And so that they keep them around and that maybe eventually they could sell them instead of letting them walk to Europe as a free agent. Now those guys, maybe they'll be able to be U22s going forward. So,
Sam Stashkul of The Athletic. Man, I'm struggling today with your name, Sam.
It's a tough one.
Sounds like it's a great soccer name, though. We know that. There's no question about that. You're living up to the Stashkul name. So let's talk about Dallas, because, you know, you brought them up. And I saw a quote from Dan Honey. Said, quote, "We'll always continue to develop young talent, specifically for the U.S. national team and sometimes for the Mexican national team. That is who we are. But we also want people who are winners, who will help us be successful. It's a delicate balance." And he was talking in the context, as you know, of who their new coach will be.
Yeah.
What's the end game for Dallas? And I ask people there all the time because they're not relevant. I get the whole youth moniker. And to their credit, that's who they are.
They've done an awesome job with that. Yeah.
You know, we see stadiums that aren't full. We see lack of coverage up there. You know, I always wonder what the end game is. And it concerns me a little bit from the competitive side of things, I guess.
Yeah, I would echo those concerns. And now they can be competitive with that model, right? They have been before. And we've seen other teams kind of use that model and be competitive. If they need to do a better job with their foreign signings. They miss on way too many of those. But if they start hitting on them, there's no reason they can't be a good team. I don't know why they fired Luchy Gonzalez. That made zero sense to me. You know, the guy, first time head coach, came in his first two seasons. He made the playoffs. He won your first playoff series in 5 years in 2020. And they've had a bad year this year. There's no doubt about that. Underperformed relative to their own expectations. And I think, you know, probably your, certainly mine, my expectations. But you fire him. He's a guy that really developed these young players, right? He was the academy director when a lot of these kids were in the academy and they played decent soccer for the most part. And you punish him and they've been dramatically worse. They've gotten worse in every way since they fired him.
It was very unlike Dallas too. When I heard he was fired, I was just like, yeah, that doesn't.
And it's just
that,
like,
that really
you
goes against the grain of what they normally do.
You don't have a high payroll. You spend a little bit of money on foreign signings, but not that much. And, you know, so in that situation, if you make the playoffs 2 out of 3 years, well, that sounds about right. You know, and you're Dan Hunt is out here saying, oh, well, we need to be an MLS Cup contender year in, year out. It's like, well, that's not how you behave. Yeah. Right? Like, you're saying that and it's good to have goals and everything, but like, if you want to be an MLS Cup contender year in, year out, well, who are the teams that are like that, right? Seattle, I would say the Galaxy of years past, right? Atlanta has been in this boat. Toronto has been in this boat. What do all those teams have in common? They're in the top 5, 6 in the league in spending.
Yep.
Right? You can be successful in MLS without being at the top of the heap financially and in the regular season particularly. But if you want to sustain success in the regular season and playoffs over a period of years, it's pretty clear that you need to spend money. And so for Dan Hunt to say that that's what they want to be, but they're not going to spend. I mean, there's a disconnect there.
It's very strange. And, you know, even to your point of, okay, they make the playoffs all the time, but really that in a league that is pretty forgiving when it allows you to get into the playoffs, has so many spots. I mean, if you're outside the playoffs, you have to consider it a bad year. I'm sorry. I mean,
even if you're in the playoffs, some of these teams that make the playoffs
don't deserve to
be.
Absolutely. Don't deserve to be there.
And so if you finish 7th or 8th, does that make a difference? Right. Like if it's you're tied on points and you lose out on a tiebreaker, like, no, chances are both of your years were pretty mediocre, like at best. So anyway, Dallas does a good job with the youth movement. If they want to be the club that they say they want to be, they need to be more serious in other areas.
Yeah, and I like your comment about bona fide DPs that could lift a lot of these young guys, could guide them, and are guys that, you know, become top-end DPs in Major League Soccer. We're talking to Sam Stashkul of the Athletic. Yeah, there's a lot of teams who set the bar for 7th place every year, you know. Oh, we're going to let it roll, and, you know, we're going to hope to make the playoffs. Then we're going to make a run. I'm personally tired of that. I make you commissioner. What would you do as a mechanism to provide more incentive for teams to end up 1 and 2 in their conference?
Interesting. Well, I think it's good that they've given the 1 seed a bye. I think that is something that has provided a little bit
more.
But
don't
you
worry about that sometimes in a momentum playoff?
Yeah, no,
I'm not
absolutely.
Even sure that's an advantage. And I've said that many years.
That's a very good point, especially in a single elimination format like MLS is in right now, where the winning team is going to play you and they are feeling really good about themselves. So, yes, I, you know, it's a difficult
question.
That
worries me. If I were a coach, that would worry me a little bit.
Because what options do you have on the table, right? Home field advantage, that already exists, right? You can give them a bye. We just talked about that.
Cash. How about a big money prize for being the – I mean, what's the Supporter Shield winner get? Let's give them big money.
Okay.
Something that really provides incentives.
Yeah. We've got Champions League in play already, right? So that's another thing that is already an incentive. I think it's pretty well incentivized. I just think that playoffs, sometimes there's going to be chaos, and that's the nature of it. And honestly, I love that about MLS. Yeah. Like, I think the playoffs are by far the best part of the season. It brings out the
we're
most.
In it, we're in it right now. You can feel it, right?
The stakes are higher, and the games start getting a little more hectic, and they're not always perfect, but they are always entertaining.
Oh, absolutely.
You know? And so that's MLS is good when it has stakes, but it doesn't have stakes for most of the season. Yeah, and that's a problem. And I don't know how you fix that with no promotion relegation, which is never going to be a thing.
Right.
And yeah, I don't know. I think there are just some structural issues that maybe you can't overcome.
Yeah. I love the fact there's consequence. Now, for instance, Seattle loses to LAFC. Now they lost to Houston. All of a sudden there's a little nervousness around Seattle and what's going on with them as they head into the playoffs, because everybody talks about playoff momentum. And to your point, there's real consequences. You have an off game. I mean, you're done, you know?
Yeah.
It's like that. All right. So quick hit on Austin FC. Obviously, we know what's going on off the field. They've hit a home run there. The future there, I'm assuming Josh Wolf will be back again.
I would think so. But it's always a weird situation when the sporting director is hired after the head coach and doesn't pick him. I would say that Josh Wolf deserves a chance to be back again. Obviously, Austin has not been great. But they actually play some decent soccer. There are things that they need to clean up, of course. The finishing has been poor for most of this season, but that's what happens when you don't sign a striker. you know, and Driussi he's a real player, right? Like, that guy should be one of the best in MLS, I think, for years to come. And I think he's already showing that. Gite, I'm sort of interested in. And, you know, over the last month or so here, their results have gotten better. Right. I think they're 3-3 in their last six, which is perfectly respectable. And I think with a couple of signings in the back and maybe one more in the midfield to kind of give them a little more robustness defensively, I think they could be looking at a pretty significant turnaround for next season.
Good call there. I like that. Talk a little bit about the Houston Dynamo. Now, you know, the rumor is Pat Onstad's going to be here.
Yeah.
Do you have to be careful of nostalgia as opposed to getting the job done? I think the thing I like about Pat Onstad, if in fact he is the choice, he's a no-nonsense guy, and this is a club that needs some no-nonsense. With Tab Ramos, if in fact
we'll see,
Tab
right?
is going to remain, right?
Yeah, so he's out of contract after this year, right? So Pat Onstad will have a decision on his hands. The Dynamo, to me, are still very unknown. I don't know what the new ownership group is going to be like. I don't know what they're going to do. This offseason, I think, will be telling in that regard. Right. In terms of what kind of players they target, how they run their coaching search, all of those things. And I'm like, I want more information. I'm very curious to see what direction they go, because I mean, you know, it better than I do. Houston and Chicago, I would say, are like the two biggest sleeping giant markets where the ingredients are kind of already there, right? New York, the ingredients in terms of the stadium, not really here yet, but Houston has it. Right. And like, if you can flip that switch, it could be something pretty special, and I don't think it's that far away. But it is going to require a lot of work and a lot of intentionality and a lot of investment from the ownership group. And so we'll see if they do it, right? And that to me is the big question about the Dynamo, and we don't know the answer to that yet.
Sam, as always, thank you very much for coming on the show. And I urge all of you listening in tonight to Soccer Matters to follow Sam's writings at The Athletic. It's great stuff. He's a sharp mind there. And your explanation of the U22 initiative was great. So thanks for doing that. We appreciate it.
I'm glad
to call you the U22 initiative expert.
There you go. Well, thank you, Glenn. Appreciate you having me on.
Thank you for coming on. We look forward to another visit down the road. That's Sam Seyskill of the Athletic, if I can talk here. We'll take a break. It's all brought to you by John Daspit and the Daspit Law Firm, DaspitLaw.com. Well, no, Josephine driving a hot rod phone. She got twin properties, gonna burn up the road. Twin exhaust is sticking out the rear. Some of that are really
years of research and innovation. Innovation Map is the new voice of innovation in Houston.
Pretty cool, huh, Morty?
Covering startups, tech, energy, health, social impact, and more. Visit innovationmap.com today.
Do it now! Do it! Do it! Do it now!
Hi, Jan Christensen from Danish Inspirations, modern contemporary furniture for 40 years in Houston. I'm here with the Danish Dynamite segment. What a week we've had in soccer. Manchester United getting trashed by Liverpool. And as a Liverpool fan, I'm happy but sad for Mr. Gunnar Solskjaer that he might be on limited time if they don't win the next three or four games. Ronald Koeman getting sacked from Barcelona. Wonder who's going to be the next one there. And one thing that stood out for me, of course, was the Brentford-Leicester game. And why is that? Because in the two squads, there's a total of 8 Danish players. 2 on Leicester and 6 on Brentford's, and of those, 5 for starters. And as a Dane, it makes me really proud that we can have that many players in the best league in the world, you know. And I contribute that to our academy philosophies and the work ethic we put into these boys. And most of all, the love for the game. And when I say that, you would love to sit in a wing recliner from Stressless at Danish Inspirations and just come in and sit in one and save $500 over the next 3 weeks. That's the wing recliner from Stressless. And also want to mention that the Danish women's team are number one in their group for the World Cup qualifying. Some great superstars from Chelsea, Pernille Harder, and from Lyon, Zina Brun. And they have like a goal score of 21-1 after the first three games. Not the greatest opposition, but still, it all counts. And so with that, I want to say, come into Danish Inspirations, the best modern contemporary furniture in Houston. And I want to say, we are red, we are white, we are Danish Dynamite. DanishInspirations.com. Thank you.
Soccer Matters on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 92.5.
Brought to you by the Daspit Law Firm. From the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Glenn Davis.
All right, final segment of the show here on Soccer Matters on ESPN 97.5. And of course, it's always presented by John Daspit and the Daspit Law Firm. DaspitLaw.com. How about a quick word here from my friends at FM Kitchen and Bar? FM Kitchen and Bar, two locations. One, Montrose and Westheimer, right next to Velvet Taco. And then, of course, north of Washington Avenue on Shepherd. Get over there. Great chicken sandwiches, burgers. Best burger in Houston, voted by the Houston Press. Great outdoor area, which you would call a beer garden. Picnic tables out there. Bring your dog. Bring your children. Bring the entire family. Monitors everywhere. It's FM Kitchen and Bar. Go over there. Say hello to Jason. Imbibe in the great food and the great craft cocktails as well. It's FM Kitchen and Bar. Proud sponsors of Soccer Matters here on ESPN 97.5. It's been a rough week for Barcelona. A loss midweek, plus the loss in the El Clasico to Real Madrid. There's no better guy to talk to than TV3's Jordi Sunyer. He joins me now. Jordi, thank you so much for coming on, as always.
Thank you for having me on the show, Glenn. Pleasure, as always.
All right, before we get into El Clasico and the tactics and the way this day really played out this past weekend, let's talk a little bit about simply the fact that, you know, when I'm watching the images of this game and the fans are back, majestic images at the Nou Camp, just take me into what that meant to people in Barcelona and Spain and fans of La Liga, really.
Okay, there are several sides of this story, because it's true that it was the best gate at the Camp Nou after the pandemic. There was not a full house because, as you know, the capacity for the Nou Camp is 98,000 spectators, and there was a gate of 86,000. But at the same time, normally before the pandemic, you always expect a Clásico to be a full house at the Camp Nou. And it wasn't the case, because that means that even if all the restrictions from the pandemic have finished, there's many people, there are many Barcelona fans who are not eager enough to go to the Camp Nou to watch this Barcelona team play, even in El Clásico. So it was difficult to get a full house because of that. You know, in other matches this season, without restrictions, gates were half the capacity of the Nou Camp. 47,000, for example, was the last gate against Dynamo Kiev in the UEFA Champions League. At the same time, before the game, there were 35,000 tickets on open sale. That means not for FC Barcelona members. And many of these tickets were sold to Real Madrid fans that came from Madrid or tourists. There were lots of tourists again at the Camp Nou. So pictures were majestic, as you were saying, for everyone. That's great to see the Nou Camp again, not absolutely full, but with the best gate since the pandemic. But it was not that beautiful at all, because as I was saying, there are several sides to the story.
Jordi Sunyer, TV3 in Barcelona, Spain, joining us. 2-1 Real Madrid. David Alaba, 32nd minute, then stoppage time. Lucas Vázquez and Sergio Aguero also scoring in stoppage time. For Barcelona. Okay. You know, this is a different Barcelona. A year ago, Lionel Messi was playing in this game. Where is the Barcelona fan base in a nutshell right now?
It's difficult to say, because there's this feeling among Barcelona fans, a feeling that the same Ronald Koeman expressed in a press conference some weeks ago. It would be, in Spanish, it's es lo que hay. In English, that would be what you see is what you get. And it's hard to swallow that, because there are many Barcelona fans that, okay, know that this team cannot fight for winning La Liga. They can be happy if they are able to go through the first phase of the UEFA Champions League and qualify for the last 16, because of course the standard of the team has lowered a lot in last years. But many fans resist this vision of what you see is what you get, because you see other teams, for example, all the games yesterday in La Liga, Sevilla versus Levante, that was a 5-3 thriller, or Betis versus Rayo Vallecano, or Atletico Madrid versus Real Sociedad, in footballing terms, all in footballing terms, were better than the Clásico. The standard of the Clásico was appalling, I would say. It was, I think, one of the worst Clásicos in years regarding the level of play by the two teams. So you see teams, more humble teams that have a plan, have an idea, know how to play, know their players and how to get the best of these players. Why don't Barcelona do the same? Okay, that's true. That's not the same team of Messi, of Neymar, and Suarez. I heard today a commentary that I think it's true. Barcelona with Messi, Neymar, and Suarez would have scored 5 goals against yesterday's Real Madrid.
But let me stop you though for a second. Come on, we get all these types of comparisons from the media, Jordi. But come on, the reality is, you've been able to have those types of players. Lionel Messi is a fulcrum of this club. Now the good times, for the time being, are over. So are Barcelona fans obviously going to be willing to suffer through times as they try to rejig things and get things back in a better place? And how much patience do they have? And what are we finding out about the fan base?
But this is very difficult, because, of course, it's very easy to say, okay, this is a transition season. We're building a new project. We have to rely on the youngsters like Gavi, for example, or Nico Gonzalez or Pedri. Okay. But when you come to reality, everybody wants to win and everybody wants to get results. The thing is, if you consider that a season winning La Copa del Rey like last season was not a good season for Barcelona. Imagine the reaction from the fans when you get another blank season without without any silverware. It's very easy to say that you have to rebuild. The truth is that one, Barcelona has to rebuild from scratch, from the ashes.
Correct.
There's no money at the club. There has been a loan granted by Goldman Sachs of nearly 600 million euros just to pay salaries, just to pay the most urgent debts in Barcelona. And it seems that thanks to this loan, Barcelona can spend around 20 million euros in the January transfer market to bring new players to the team. But 20 million euros in today's football market is nothing. You can sign first level players for Barcelona's first team with 20 million euros. So it's very easy to say that, but it's not that easy to get Barcelona back on track. And with Ronald Koeman, I think it happens the same, because he says he wants to lay the foundations for a new Barcelona, for the Barcelona of the future. But you have seen many matches this season in which Ronald Koeman plays for winning, or not for winning because he's not winning, but for getting a result. There's this urgency to get a result. And there's many people here in Barcelona, an important part of the media and the crowd, which are followers of the philosophy of Jochen Cruyff, like a religion, I would say. And this is not the philosophy of Jochen Cruyff. In his first 2 years as Barcelona coach, Jochen Cruyff won a Cup Winners' Cup and a Copa del Rey. It was from the third season on that team, Jochen Cruyff's team, became the dream team. So it's not easy, but in reality, there's this urgency in Barcelona fans to get results, which I think are not possible in the current situation unfolding at Barcelona.
Yeah, that's a great, great point. Jordi Sunyer, TV3, joining us right now. You know, it's kind of hard to go from having this messiah who's deified, like Lionel Messi, to now that, you know, who is it? Is it Memphis Depay? Is it Ansu Fati, who's trying to develop his career? You know, who is that face and messiah now? I mean, it's not possible to replace Messi. Who would that be now?
Ansu Fati, for sure. Even the club have renewed his contract, and they stage all this show about his renewal this last week, days before the Clásico. He's seen as the player that has to lead this Barcelona revolution, and he's really been the only player that has been able to bring illusion and bring faith to the fans. A homegrown player, even if he came to Barcelona when he was 12, he played for one season for Sevilla before, and in his hometown in Andalusia. But he's a homegrown player coming from La Masia, and he is presented as the symbol of the new Barcelona. But we have to look at Gavi. I think Gavi yesterday was one of the best players on the pitch because of his attitude. Of course, he's a 17-year-old player. He's not a senior. He's as we say here, juvenil. I mean, he would normally not be playing for the first team due to his age. He's not 18. But his attitude, his will to compete, the things he does. I think, Ansu Fati and Gavi and Pedri, of course, are the three key players for rebuilding Barcelona. But, among all of them, the first of them, of course, Ansu Fati, no doubt.
We're talking to Jordi Sunyer, TV3. I mean, obviously, because of the financial problems, it has opened the door for opportunity for other players, hasn't it? That would not be seeing the field likely if there wasn't this giant financial fallout, right?
Of course. Yeah. And that's a good thing. In every crisis, there's an opportunity. That's a business motto. But in football, I think you can also apply that. many Barcelona fans, many sections of the media have been claiming for restoring this weight of homegrown players in the first team, not bringing so many players from abroad, and this crisis situation. And I think Ronald Koeman believes in that, brings the possibility for Nico, for Gavi, not Ansu Fati because he was playing for the first team already last year, but for many young players to claim they are able to get first team minutes. And that's good because the best teams in Barcelona history, the dream team by Johan Cruyff, Pep Guardiola's team, you may remember that in several games during the reign of Pep Guardiola, Barca played with 11 players, 11 homegrown players, players from La Masia, on the pitch at the same time. This doesn't happen anymore. We are more than happy if 7 or 8 homegrown players are on the same time on the pitch at the same time on the pitch, and this is a good thing for the future. It comes from a crisis, but this is a good thing for the future.
Jordi Sunyer, TV3, brought to you by DaspitLawAustin.com and DaspitLaw.com. All right, so you just mentioned La Masia. Where is the health of La Masia? Where is the priorities lie with them now? Do you see another group of players coming through here in the future? You know, because we always hear about La Masia and how it's supplied teams around the world. Where do you see youth development at Barcelona right now?
There are always breeds of good players that everybody points at. For example, this year, there are very good news about the 12-year-olds, which we call here the infantil. Obviously, we are talking about players that we cannot know at the present time if they will be great players or even if they will play the game professionally in the future. But La Masia keeps working, but they also need, La Masia needs also to rebuild because, for example, Barcelona, last week, not that week, the week before, there was a mini Clásico, the second teams, of Real Madrid and Barcelona playing one against the other in the Spanish third division, at, the Estadio Alfredo Di Stefano in Madrid, the stadium where that was the home for Real Madrid during the pandemic. It was a dull 0-0 draw, an appalling match. But you saw Real Madrid, the second team, the B team of Real Madrid, playing with all Spanish players, bar one. And all players had spent at least 1 year in the academy, in Real Madrid's academy, in the juvenil team, in the youth teams. Barcelona B played with 6-7 players signed for this season, only for Barça B. Players who are playing in other teams that don't know who what La Masia is, that don't know the what we call here the ADN of Barcelona, the style of play, the way of playing, that has to be changed because that's not the philosophy of Barcelona. Barcelona B has always been a team that has been fed with players coming from the lower ranks. And that's a thing that must be changed. So La Masia is not in its best health, but good players keep coming. Also, because guys keep playing on the streets, you get a lot from playing on the street and learning tricks and learning things that cannot be taught in an academy. And there will always be breeds of good players like the one I was telling you before. But several things also have to be changed in La Masia. Let's hope that in the last few years, these issues are changed.
All right, let's go to Serginho Dest, the U.S. international. He chose the United States. He's become a starting player for Greg Berhalter here in the U.S. during World Cup qualifying. Got pushed higher in this game by Ronald Koeman. Had that wonderful chance to put Barcelona up 1-0, which could have completely changed the entire day. What type of reaction have fans had to him? Is he a well-liked player in Barcelona? Take us a little bit into how people are reacting. I mean, obviously, they're upset that he didn't take that chance because it could have been a different day.
I knew you were going to ask me about Serginho this, and I was thinking, how can I sum up Serginho's performance without being too harsh with the
Let it go, Jordy. Let it go. No, we're all about the real here. We don't want fluff. We don't want sugarcoating. Let it go.
No, he was not that bad. But no, the thing is, Serginho, as you know, he's a right back. As you were saying, Koeman pushed him higher. He's not a winger. And he's not used to getting these open goal situations like the one he got yesterday that could have really changed the game. The way he shot, you normally don't expect a striker, a proper winger, to shoot like that. He's not used to have this situations. He was playing against Real Madrid. Of course, you see him playing for the United States national team, but you see him scoring screamers and spectacular goals. But against who? With all due respect, but Honduras or Trinidad and Tobago or El Salvador or whoever are not Real Madrid. So it's different. And I think he's an example of that kind of feeling I was telling you before. What you see is what you get. Serginho arrived in Barcelona with only 20 or 25 first team games experience at Ajax in the Dutch league, which level is lower than the Spanish league. And I think you cannot demand any more from him or the feeling among the fans.
That's what I was going to get at, or the expectations now, because there are opportunities for players because of the financial fallout. Are sometimes the expectations too high on these guys? And the reality is this was where they are as a player, and the hope is they're going to get better in the future. Is it hard for people to kind of find that common ground?
Now, look, let me tell you one thing, because I think there are common issues with Serginho and with Frenkie de Jong. You have seen Frenkie de Jong being yesterday against Real Madrid, but also in the last few games, being a shadow of the player he once was, even with Barcelona. But of course, Frenkie played more games for Ajax than Serginho Dest did. But here you have two players molded in the Ajax way, in the Ajax style of play, that play now for a team that doesn't play like Ajax plays anymore, because Barcelona has, even with Ronald Koeman, abandoned this philosophy. And you watch Barcelona against Bayern Munich playing a defensive game like they were, I don't know, Burnley or a lower division team, giving the ball to Bayern Munich and expecting not to receive many opportunities. So I think it's difficult for them. And the feeling among fans about Serginho is, okay, he's not a bad player, but in the current situation, he's a young player playing for a team that's not a good team, playing differently, playing in a different way than the one he was accustomed to at Ajax. It's not easy for him. Obviously, there are criticisms about not Serginho, but with Frenkie de Jong overall, because you have seen him playing very well with Barcelona. But I think we have to put everything in context, and that would be a good point on why Serginho is not being as brilliant as you could expect in a player that is so important for Ajax 2-3 years ago, and that Ajax is not that is not willing to let him go. Barca had to pay a high amount of money to bring Serginho to Barcelona.
Jordy, as always, we thank you so much for coming on. Greetings from the United States to you, as always, in Spain, in Barcelona. And thank you so much for coming on. We always appreciate your insight.
Thanks to you. It's always a pleasure chatting with you. Thank you, Glenn.
So that does it tonight for Soccer Matters on ESPN 97.5. This is your home for soccer coverage. We've also done some Dynamo Radio here this year on this program. Again, our presenting sponsor, a big thank you to John Daspit and the Daspit Law Firm, DaspitLaw.com. Don't forget, if you're getting in any type of accident, call the Daspit Law Firm at 713-322-HURT. They're bilingual, 713-322-HURT. Hit me up on Twitter and Instagram. There's two ways. At Glenn Davis Soc, S-O-C, and at Soccer Matters GD. Your support in these places is important. Please let us know about your wants and desires from this show. You know how to get a hold of me. Again, thank you for tuning in tonight, for producer Andrew Carlson, for all of you tuning in tonight. Don't forget the podcast at ESPN975.com. That does it for Soccer Matters tonight. Until next Tuesday night, I'm Glenn Davis.